Hi, today we're talking with Simon and Missy from BKK. Now, they're an architecture firm who's been around for many years and they've worked in multiple different sectors. And some of the ways that they've used to get into those sectors is to JV. It's a fantastic way for organisations to be able to look at ways that they can get into new sectors or industries, or to be able to look at partnerships that they can expand. But with those, things go well and things don't. So let's hop on in and have a great chat about what we can do to have fantastic JVs to grow, but also make sure that we're managing them for the right outcomes for everybody. Welcome to the Be Inspired podcast. Today we are talking with Missy and Simon from BKK. We're going to go in a little bit and talk about JVs, which BKK have been doing for many years, and there's some fantastic lessons learned and fantastic benefits in doing so. So let's hop on in. Simon, do you want to tell us a little bit about BKK and how you started this architectural firm?
Well, we started almost 25 years to the day, and we just had dinner last night to celebrate 25 years in practice. So that's it's a really nice time to reflect on that. I can't quite believe it's been 25 years. I can't believe that at all. But
when did you start it, mate? When you were five?
yes, of course. No, I think there wasn't any great strategy. There was three of us that started it: Tim Black, myself, and Julian Kosloff. And they're the Black Kosloff Knot, and short for BKK. I don't think there's any great strategy. A lot of people asked us at the start, was there some sort of like DCM did at the time, Dan DeCorker Marshall, was there like a suit person, a creative, and a, you know, and a contracts person or something, you know, I don't know, client person. It was really more that we were just down at the pub one day, some friends, and thought we were pretty sick of our jobs. So let's give it a go. And I don't think we, you know, really... I mean, at the time, I just didn't think it would perhaps last that long. I had no expectation of where it would go. And the great thing was, especially back then too, that there wasn't much of a barrier to entry. You know, really, we just bought some computers. Mm-hmm. We've never really had any debt over that 25 years. It's pretty
fantastic.
Straightforward in being able to grab some computers, start around the kitchen table, started doing renovations for family and friends, you know, like most architecture practices do. Yeah. And, you know, gradually sort of just built up bit by bit. And then suddenly you've got a 25 years down the track and you've got a practice and done some big projects. Yeah, it's been, you know, it's been a lot of hard work and a lot of challenges along the way, but thoroughly enjoyable too. And, you know, we're really proud of where we've got to. And yeah, that's certainly testament to the people we've had along the way and the people that we've worked with. Both clients, consultants, and our collaborators.
Yeah, fantastic. And so talk to us a little bit about what are the sectors and the size and types of projects that you've worked on throughout the time and that you specialise in today.
I'll try and make it sort of, it's a standard cocktail party pitch, isn't it? Because people always say, you're an architect. They say, what sort of work do you do? My partner's an artist. They say the same thing to her or to me as well. What sort of art does she do? What sort of architecture do you do? And I kind of, well, I usually say we do everything, but health really. And we've even done a little bit of that at a master planning level. So we started in residential. We still love doing residential. We're still doing some renovations of some houses at the moment. So single residential, we do multi-res, we do public buildings, performing arts center, you know, gallery projects. We do multi-residential apartment buildings, did I say that? And urban design, infrastructure, so quite large. So the smallest projects, you know, sort of $500,000, and the biggest one is about $3 billion. So there's quite a range in between. And a lot of tertiary institutions, so universities, schools as well, education's a big thing in which we're involved. So right across the board, really.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, well, let's talk about that because you obviously do. You've worked across such a mix of things. Look, Missy, what about yourself? So when did you come into BKK and how's that sort of emerged over time?
Hi everyone. I joined BKK almost to the day as well, 7 years ago. And I was actually about to leave the industry. I'd been working for creative practices from galleries to interiors, architecture for about 20 years. And I was a bit tired of it. And so I went out and did a few things on my own and traveled. And then three people, I think, in one day told me that BKK were looking for a role and I'd be good for it. So I ended up applying and thinking, just do part time, I'll see how it goes, and joined them. I'd heard they had a good culture, but you never know until you're actually in a business if that's true or not. And I very quickly went from part-time to saying, I'm going to go to full-time. This is a great place to work. I love it. I can bring my full self to work. All my values aligned in, you know, reconciliation, social procurement, et cetera. So, yeah, and I've loved it and I've grown and, you know, there's been great support for my pathway into leadership. So
Absolutely. Fantastic. So it sounds like you're at that next sort of point and what the next
image is. Stay tuned.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk a little bit about that time. So where did the idea of JVing, or when did you start actually doing that?
Well, I think, you know, we'd always, our ambition was always, you know, and I say it kind of happened by chance, but we were ambitious. And I think we'd always, like, I love doing residential work. And I still love doing it. And I still, so it's part of me that thinks, gee, I could be like Glenn Merkitt and just do houses all the time and be quite happy doing that. But we did have an ambition to do bigger scale work and public work. And that's, I think that's always the difficult thing for young practices and old, for smaller architecture practices to kind of build up to be, and it's increasingly harder because of the complexity of the work now and the onerous nature of compliance, insurance, kind of all the assurance stuff we do behind the scenes beyond design makes it increasingly difficult. So it really started out through, there was some real opportunities, and we were lucky. And I think this is just happenstance when we started the practice in 2000, and you know it was really at the beginning of, you know, probably one of Australia's biggest building booms through the early 2000s, and there was a lot of interesting projects out there and a lot of interesting design. And Melbourne's a very, I think one of the great things about it, it's always been known as a design city, but I think what makes it really great is the patronage. There's a really sophisticated patronage here, both in the private sector, but also within government to invest in good design. And that's spread quite a lot, and that exists around the country now. But back then that was heavily centered in Melbourne. And we had the opportunity through some contacts to pitch for quite a large, well, at the time it was quite small, a master planning project out in Dandenong. We just at the time thought, oh, I've got no idea how to even start this. Or, I mean, we did have sort of some ideas about what we wanted to do, but we haven't really worked in that space and worked for government like that. We went out to one of our landscape partners in TCL and said to them, you know, we really want you to collaborate with us on this. We know they've done that sort of work, a bit more experienced in that. So really it was about a need at the time and a desire. We'd worked with them and really liked them. And, you know, similar sort of age to us, particularly the Melbourne practice. I mean, a bit more established in Adelaide originally. And that turned into quite a large project about master planning the whole of central Dandenong. I ended up working out there for about 7 years or so. And,
Not a short JV either.
Quite a large one. And we rebuilt the whole main street. And we're actually back out there now doing some work around the market there. But yeah, it was quite a large project, and we won, you know, a few awards for it and other things. And it kind of just got us into that to government space. And then we started doing other projects similar to that. And I think what clients, I think, will look for is your capability and confidence that you can deliver on those large projects. And, you know, I mean, you're sort of hoping to kind of break into those bigger jobs as you're younger. But, I mean, it takes a lot to trust in people with large sums of money, particularly young people, if you kind of don't think they know what they're doing, unless they're completely exceptional. So it really was, I think people appreciated our design expertise, but were wanting some assurance that perhaps we could deliver on that and deliver on the project outcomes and all the technical things that go with that. So it was about kind of leveraging up into those bigger projects. And then we saw the possibility of that, and we actually enjoyed it too. It wasn't, I think the other thing is the ethos of the practice, and the three of us that started it have always designed together. There's not a designer, and that we don't have those roles, as I said earlier. So it was always about collaborative design approach. And we just took that further. We just thought, well, we're not egotistical about that. And I think it's a very different approach to architects of generations past. I mean, I think, you know, the sort of post-Second World War, really through to the end of the millennium, there was a sort of a, you know, kind of fountainhead idea about architecture, you know, the Frank Gehry sort of, you know, leading figure who then, you know, the design comes to the top and sort of filters down. And I think we thought there's actually a different approach here, and it's much more, architecture's become much more complex, the problems are much more complex, and they need a team. You need a lot of people kind of pitching into that. It can't come from a singular vision, and if it does, it quite often fails. So, and I think, you know, it's also, we were educated at RMIT in the 90s, and I really see that as a real, particularly in design, was a push against the sort of patriarchal kind of idea of society and architecture. I mean, we were taught by some pretty strong feminist tutors there, and taught us about post-colonialism, deconstruction, a whole lot of philosophical approaches that really kind of tore apart this sort of patriarchal idea of a singular voice. And so we opened that up to, you know, we kind of saw that was, you know, an equitable way forward in the way we should think about our societies. Really, it's a philosophical approach as well about many voices will make a better outcome. But it can't be a free-for-all. It needs to be a curated approach to that. And we've learned how to do that too.
Well, and I think we find that in the industry now and what, you know, architects want to be working in is collaborative organisations where people are working together. And now what we're talking about is not just collaboration internally, but how do we actually properly collaborate with others? So I think that's a fantastic first initial example into that. So that enabled you to really grow into a new area, do work you would never been able to do or win yourself. I'm assuming it was also seen by those who were appointing you that, you know, there would have been two teams in essence, they're doubling the numbers. And so instead of you competing against, you know, big tier one who might have all these teams, you're actually bringing, I suppose, that special source of we can work with you and you're kind of getting more of that particular part where we can service you. You're not one of many big projects that are lost, but we also have the capability of these teams and this diversity within skill set and approach to that.
Well, I think if you, I mean, it's like science. If you, you know, if you've got a big scientific problem you're trying to solve, I mean, we're sort of beyond Einstein or something sitting there kind of dreaming away the solution. You go out and you get a big team and you get a team of experts and you pull them together. And the work is in really getting that team to kind of operate at its best. Mm-hmm. You know, I think and draw all the benefits, you know, of the many people within that team, not just within multiple organisations, but the people within those organisations. And that philosophy of collaboration, I think we really saw the advantage of that, and so did our clients in collaborating with clients. And I think it was, a change in the attitude of how particularly governments, but also I think the private sector too, started to work with designers in that they weren't just going out and saying, oh, give me a building or give me this. We want to work with you through that. So some really talented and really experienced people within the client base and actually getting the most out of them in the design process as well. So we've always thought that the best way we can deliver a project for you is to collaborate with you, whether you're doing a house or doing a big city piece of infrastructure or a community, in fact, like actually talking to them or First Nations voices in understanding all of their inputs and starting to distill them and bring them into a design approach. So the collaboration kind of idea is much more than just a sort of idea of we're just going to work with a few people. It's actually a philosophical approach to how we bring a whole lot of voices together and get a much more complex understanding of the problems and therefore a better solution.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just cover off on that. So that was the first one. How many JVs have you done throughout your time?
Well, I don't know.
Could you count them?
I mean, to some degree, I mean, if you continue, I mean, if you sort of take that to its end point, I mean, all of them are in some ways. Mm. I mean, we think about them all in that way. I mean, the best houses we've ever done, and whether it's a renovation or not, we always talk about this sort of approach of the architect, you know, builder, client. Mm. The best ones are where they're all just really working together well. Like if we go out and just say, we're designing this and this is our vision and get out of my way, you know, you're going to live in this however I tell you to, it's not going to be a great outcome. So, and getting all those things and understanding and not just sort of telling builders, you know, this is how you're going to do it, actually getting the best out of them and listening to them and getting their input into the process as well. So the collaboration extends right through to consultants and the delivery of process. So, I mean, I would say all of them really, and some of them much more complex. Some of them, you know, been some real challenges, and some of them have been really easy and seamless. So it's pretty much every project we've ever done.
So what about in regards to, I suppose, if we think about it more as a JV between yourself and other architectural practices, and how has that helped you, if you can give us some examples into some sectors you've missed one, sectors and size of works and what the others were like too, because whether they're other small firms, similar size, bigger firms, larger firms.
Mm. It's a good question.
It's been a mix, hasn't it?
Yeah.
More recently, there's been some smaller upcoming firms, some the same size, and some have been really large, which those ones bring the larger practices, you know, bring with them a whole team of individual experts in one area, which is quite amazing to learn from, not just from the operations governance side, but also the team, you know, their development is huge.
Mm.
But yeah, it's, I mean, Simon, you know, there's been so many different size practices we've worked with. It just depends on the project and what the value is to bring in someone else and who has that skill or that expertise that we don't have that is going to make the project richer, more successful, a better outcome for the client and the community that it's serving.
Yeah, I think we think very carefully about the teams now. You know, going back to what I was saying earlier, this complex problem, we think very carefully about who they are and what the team is and what we're trying to bring together to deal with both the client's issues and the communities and a whole range of things we're trying to sort of work through in the process. And some of these projects we work on now, you know, they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years long. So you want to make sure you get it right, because if it's not, it can be a real disaster and a real chore. You know, I mean, probably the most obvious example for us has been in infrastructure space, and we've done quite a lot. I mean, it's quite hard to get into infrastructure work, and particularly these large, you know, really large projects tend to be done by big, you know, sometimes multinational firms, but certainly national firms. It's be careful what you wish for, but we'd had these very successful run of winning competitions to design toilet blocks for became specialists in dunnies, basically.
We're really good at them. They're quite beautiful, some of them.
They're largely rest stations. So I should say it's a bit more complex than that. But when you're doing a bypass around a town, a duplication of a road or something that bypasses the town, there's a real need to get people to stop, because previously they would have stopped in a town and rested. So it's demonstrable safety kind of issues that happen in doing that. And so they invest quite a lot in these rest stations to actually, you know, make them great places to stop and spend some time, not just utilitarian. And in the scale of a road project there, you know, the budgets are quite large for a sort of toilet block, but at the scale of a road project, they're quite small. And so we'd done, you know, sort of probably about 3 of those that were, you know, we'd won awards for and done, you know, reasonably well. We won an art piece, public art award for one of them, which was quite sort of remarkable. And so we'd done a little bit of that work, but we hadn't, and some sort of pitched on bridges and other things, and we'd been working away in it for a long time without a lot of success. But we'd had, you know, we're known for urban design. We'd been doing some work in that space, and we got invited to pitch into some of the level crossing removal projects that happened here in Melbourne, and a really successful program. And I think really, really well done, actually, really well executed by the government. They set up a fantastic team at LXRA to deliver those. And we didn't have any experience in rail. And so we grabbed some friends of ours, Kiriakou Architects. Gary Kiriakou is a guy we studied with. He shared office space with us for a little while when he was setting up his own practice. And they'd done quite a bit of rail work, and it's quite specialised, and it's quite technical. And we just brought them together and ended up winning one of the positions on the alliance, and did 3 railway stations together. And that was a really fantastic collaboration. And I think it taught us a lot about bringing together, perhaps, you know, we probably have more of a design role in that, and we're known for our design approach and urban design. We did it also with Aspect, who, you know, were fantastic Aspect landscapes, who were really good. And so there was a really 3-way collaboration there between us. But those projects too, you're working in an alliance where you're in a project office largely, and you collaborate with everyone. I find them the most intriguing and fantastic environments, because you've got the builders sitting over there, the engineers, the guys doing the geotechnical investigations, signaling, you know, everything's in the room. So you can just go over and talk to someone, even at the earliest stages of design, and say, what do you think about this? And it's quite a different approach to architecture. So there's a whole another sort of collaboration that happens within them. But within the design team, it was really quite successful, and we didn't treat it in a way. We also had Jacobs Architects, who were part of the alliance. So it was really the 4 design teams. And we didn't say, you go away and do this and you do this and you do that. We actually just blended the teams completely. And we just shared the fee, a third, a third, a third, between the architects. And we started in a big project office, and then about 6 months in or 8 months into it, delivered the rest of the 3 stations in our bedrooms, actually here, for 2 years during lockdown.
COVID.
So that was kind of an interesting collaboration in that way, but it was hugely successful. And I think at times, you know, it didn't, you weren't really working for BKK, or, you know, there wasn't this sort of distinction about those sort of tribal
yeah,
things.
Yeah, you're working on this team.
You're actually just working for the team that was, you know, the SEPA team that were delivering on their lives. Yeah. And also with the client too. The client was really hands-on, and they were really, you know, we developed a really strong relationship with them. And I still, you know, consider them both, you know, consider the people we deal with quite good friends.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, you've touched on it. So the sort of benefits of doing it. So for you, it sounds like, you know, it is, I mean, I think what's quite unique about BKK is that I'd say you're probably the traditional architect in, I don't have to be in sectors. We don't have to put everybody into this. We want diversity in the work that we do. And that must be quite attractive for people coming to join you, that they probably wouldn't get that much diversity. You know, if you go and work at a big firm, you might get to work on lots of different things, but you probably, you know, you're stuck in certain teams, or you're stuck on certain projects. So I'm assuming that that's a benefit in itself of having that diversity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, interviewed a lot of people over the years, and with BKK, people are coming to work with us because of that. They want that experience across the board of different projects. They may be younger, not sure if they want to work in a certain sector yet, or they just do love being across a whole variety of sectors. And what the collaboration JV allows our staff as well is that they come in to a medium-sized practice where they have a really exciting career path across different projects, but then they can go and work in these really large projects where they're accelerated learning, et cetera, you know, getting access to people like Simon spoke about, and say before, like the spaces these people, our staff work in. One of them was 300 staff from four different countries, an urban design team of 60 people. But then they can come back to our office of, you know, 30 people, and they have this amazing culture and know everyone, and get to then go and work on something really small, maybe, you know. And these large projects that do go for multiple years will have a downtime, so they'll come back to BKK, work on something, help out with something. It might be jumping around on documentation, or they may be helping out with concepts, etc., and then they'll go back into these big projects again. So it's incredibly exciting. And I always say to the younger staff who are about to go into these big projects and into project offices, and sometimes they're a little bit unsure of what it's going to be like. But I say, you know, you'll learn over there what you might like in 1 year, what might take three for others in a smaller office. Like, you're going to have access, like Simon says, to all these really intelligent people who are great at their jobs, who have been doing it for a very long time. And you have to collaborate and communicate with them, because the projects move so fast, especially infrastructure, that you can't be someone in those big offices just sitting in isolation, just doing your work. So, it's a really great experience. And I think that is the reason why people come to BK.
But they can be quite grueling too. I think that's, I mean, for us as well, the directors and principals of the business.
Unfortunately, we lost Simon at this point, but Missy and I continue the fantastic conversation. So if you're a director of a company and you're sort of thinking about this, some people are like, oh, I don't know, I'm a bit hesitant, is that going to do it? But I'm interested in, you know, I've heard that from Simon in regards to the collaboration side of things, but I think it's also then more, well, actually as an income side of things. Mm. You know, how does that look? How does this actually potentially waver you out? But how do you make sure that you're doing that? One, within a cost structure, because the difference is, do you just go and do it yourself? You know, you guys could have just got big, right?
Yes.
Versus finding other people. You go and do that and you're like, right, and then we're going to go after that. Is there also, you know, a conscious also decision to rather JV versus get big and carry all the risk yourself and do all of that, carry all the costs, and then become an undulating sort of team, whereas here you can scale up by also using other people, then scale back down, then scale, or find continuous relationships you can keep working with the same people instead of hiring massive overheads.
And there's, I think, so much in that. I mean, because we really want to keep our team at a medium size because of the culture. As soon as you start getting, you know, 50, 80, and you're having to build up for a big project and then let 30 people go at the end of the project, it's really hard for a team to build relationships internally and efficient and be really efficient working together. And we've had people working in our practice with multiple, like, two hands, people who have got long service leave at BKK, they're younger than me, you know, George has been with BKK since he was a student. He's one of the principals. So we really treasure and protect our culture, and to JV means that we can really protect that.
Yeah.
Go into a big project, create a bigger team, but then come back and the team's still the same, you know. So we're not losing people. We're not having to rehire, all of those things that we know costs a lot of money. And as long as you are transparent up front and agree up front with who you're collaborating with on the split of the fee, who's working, you know, the time split, what it looks like, then you're tracking that, you know, every 2 to 4 weeks. Like, you really need to be tracking it. You have to have one person on each team who are talking and tracking it and overseeing it.
Yeah.
Soon as something starts to favour one for the other, you start to pull it back and understand why, or is it because someone's gone on leave or someone's leaving, you need to replace them, so that you can really protect that fee and the time spent. The split.
You must say that must be hard when you go one third, but then you might have more people. And then how you decide who's doing what and what expertise that you need as well, and how then you mix into two businesses of, okay, we've got this, and if this project's going on for 1 or 2 years, you kind of know somebody might be stuck in there or 50 or 60% of their time. And then how you also keep that going for the other people as well. Do you generally, I mean, obviously it depends on the size of the project too, but do you generally assign somebody full-time onto it, or do you try to assign people sort of 60%? So if they want to do, you know, if you're in a big infrastructure project, whilst it's great, you know, for creatives, artistic, they might get a bit bored by the technical, right? And I'm assuming for more developing students is, well, actually, I want to do the sexy thing, right? Like, if I can have the house renovation, that is like just that being able to use that side of your brain while you're in very technical detailing and a lot of, you know, engineers involved and everything like that. It's a very different approach.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you look at the two practices, for example, if it's 2 or 3 practices, and see who's there and who the best people for the job is. And if, you know, it may be a case that we have more people at the front end from BKK in the design stages, but they would be full time on it, then a couple might come off, or they'll come back in or during DD documentation. But they're always there seems to, the biggest part of the project is, you know, they usually start off quite slow in terms of resourcing and then really ramp up. Like one recently, I think the UD team was like 60 people, but when it started, it might have been 10, and then it peters down and now it's 2 on one of the ones we're doing, and they're just overseeing, you know, the construction stages. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not forever that people are on it, and we really do make sure that our team, if they're going into a long infrastructure project, they really understand what they're going into. If they really don't want to do infrastructure, and that happens, that's okay. There's people in our practice that don't want to do it and they focus on other areas of education, multi-res, et cetera, and that's fine. But most people do want to try it because you do learn so much. It really is great, especially for grads, architects, people who should learn about BIM. You know, we have a BIM coordinator who gets to work with, you know, 3 really experienced BIM managers. So we just set those expectations. I keep an eye on them. I'm always in the project offices when they're there, just dropping in, checking in on everyone. Team come back. There's professional development happening within those project offices and on those projects.
Yeah, great.
They might be there for 2 or 3 years working on a project. It doesn't mean they're development stunts, you know. It's all the same. Business as usual.
And it's not, I suppose it's the difference, and very much what you're saying is the BKK approach to things is, for us, it's who we are, what we do, what our culture is, what our core sort of is, right?
Yep.
We're very clear on who we are, how we behave, what we do, why we do what we do.
Yes.
But then, you know, we're going to take on projects that, you know, dunnies that are sexy. No, or we're going to take on big infrastructural projects, which is very, very different nature. But generally people will just go and do them and they get stuck. And, you know, you then interview candidates are like, I just need to get out of this. And now I'm pigeonholed into this. But for somebody to have that, you know, I mean, infrastructure spend might have gone down right now. But, I mean, there's so much to be built still, that's not going to be, you know, everybody's welcome to come to Queensland where this is only going to continue to grow.
That's right. So, I mean, the skills they get are fantastic, and the relationships, like a lot of the younger architects working on these projects now have a fantastic network of engineers that they know who value design and really champion it. So there's all those benefits. And then there's people who loved it because they got to collaborate with someone else on all of the digital visualization software that they'd never got to really use in that way before. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of rich experiences. But yes, we do make sure that when our team are working in a project office, they still know they're working for BKK. They're still part of our culture. They're still part of our team. We keep them connected. We have Monday staff meetings all together in HQ, head office, office. Friday afternoon drinks or just social events, and we might swap them between the project office and our office. I drop in frequently, try and make it fun, have lunch with people, go out. I also, with their professional development, if there's someone I know who's really ambitious and wanting to, you know, develop their career even more while they're working on these projects, and I can see that they're sitting with working closely with someone from the other collaborators' company, I will speak to that person and say, hey, could you do some mentoring here? Are you happy to do some development? Our BKK staff member's really keen to be learning X, Y, and Z, and you have that skill on this job. They've always been really receptive to that and said, yeah, we'd love to. They're great, you know. So they build these really great working relationships too, which is fantastic, you know, which hopefully they'll have for the rest of their career.
Oh, so, and I think exposure and that, but it really is around that human part. You know, I often say these things are never actually that complex. You just need to ask people or make those things happen.
Yes.
All right, Missy, so thank you. We've obviously had a few technical issues with Simon and he's going to drop back in when he can. But I think it's a great opportunity for us to talk about, obviously from the operational point of view, what things, you know, need to really be done to set these things up for success. So do you want to talk us through some of the sort of challenges that you found or some of the things that you have found have worked really well, and then what that would look like if you were to give advice to somebody in setting one of these up now, both on small and large scale as well, because obviously our audience may be looking at more JVs to, let's say, for example, get into a school and a new area, or it might be to expand, or it might be even an interior design firm looking to partner with, or a landscape firm looking to partner with an architectural firm, as you said, to win those types of things.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've learned a lot over the 7 years at BKK, because it's such a part of practice. I think as a practice manager, your first role is right from the very start when, you know, the opportunity arises and need to be questioning the team. What's the value we're bringing to this collaboration? What's the value the collaborators are bringing? So really making sure everyone's thinking about that before we even go ahead. And then you just need to start talking to the wider team that you're collaborating with as soon as possible. The earlier, the better. So we had some great examples where really large infrastructure projects where we must have started talking, you know, 6 months out or maybe 6 to 3 months out when we were putting in the submission and thinking, well, we might win it, we may not. But you can start planning then, because once the project starts, it's too late. So you need to be thinking about it almost like you're setting up another practice for the team. So what are the values that you want to bring into this project as a combined team? What are the decision-making routes? Who's responsible for what? What's your role and responsibility? What's every individual person on the team's role and responsibility? Who's signing off on the design? Who gets the final say on that? Who's checking the drawings? Like, everybody needs to know what their role is, having an organizational structure of the team, even pinning that up, you know, when you're in a project office, so everybody knows. Having a really good induction process, because people might come on through the project, you know, people might be leaving halfway through. So what happens if someone resigns who's a key player on your team? What are you going to do? Who's going to be hiring them? Who's the HR manager for the project team? So you're going to be looking after your own team individually, coming in and checking in on them. But day to day, who do they go to if they've got something that, you know, they need to discuss? So all of that needs to be planned out, documented. You need templates. You need to have something set up for financial reporting and tracking timesheets. What systems are you using? What system are your collaborators using? Are you both using the same software? Well, that's great, but the chances are you're not. So if we're leading all of the billing and invoicing and financial tracking, then how are we receiving people's timesheets, and are we putting them into one big Excel spreadsheet that, you know, becomes a beast over the years? So you really need to be planning all that out, because you can't be doing that the week that you know you have to be sending reports off to the team on how the project's tracking. I'm talking to HR manager at the other practice. I'm talking to the accounts team in the other offices for different businesses we're working with. The directors, the leadership team are working together to say, okay, what's our role and who's going to be take on what position and responsibility in this team? And then we need to let the rest of the team know that you're going to this director for this, this director for something else. The more planning you can do with the other team ahead of time, the smoother it's going to go. And just being really transparent,
It is. And I think that's, I mean, you've got some HR things in there, but you've got some basic operational parts really of, you know, it, and again, it depends on how you're going to split the fee, what you're going to do. Right. Mm-hmm. Because in very simple terms, you either go, yeah, this is all it. Or I'm assuming in most cases, you're actually going, well, this is it. And we're bringing these resources. You know, we're pitching for this and we're going to potentially win it on. So let's say, for example, you've got somebody who's done more resi and commercial work, and then you're going for something that's more on the education side or social procurement side of things. They might bring more of the skills and abilities in. They might have that team. Let's say you're growing and doing that. They might then have, you've got the design ethos. So sort of what you were saying, you'll bring the design ethos into the infrastructure, and then they'll bring the technical side or more of those people. But if you're billing in the design phase, you know, is it something that you're going, we're going to split the fee 50-50, or is it something you're saying, we think proportionately our team's going to be doing 75% or majority of the design phase, and then the other team's going to do, you know, like 80% of more the documentation and delivery side of things. How do you work that in? And why, when you're billing the client and then when you're actually distributing funds, what are different ways that you've done that and approached that?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, you know, we've had some pretty big spreadsheets beforehand, working out splits of fees before a job commences. The most common has been, you know, like quite often a 60-40, 70-30 split across the whole job. Yeah, it's like, you know, you take the total job and you say, okay, this is what it's going to end up, because, you know, there's the bumps and the peaks and troughs, but at the end, that's the split, because your team's got these skills we don't have, and mapping it all out. And then it's another exercise of just ongoing programming and resourcing to make sure, okay, what's coming up next? This is where we're going to come back a bit and put pens down, but you guys are going to be more intense, but we'll still be involved, of course, but it's a less involved. And then with the, sorry, yeah.
I was just going to ask, from a purely cash flow point of view, though, I'm assuming that's, I mean, because otherwise you're just squabbling week by week or whenever you're doing, you know, billing out. Versus doing it as a proportion of, okay, we're going to do this, we've sort of got this much of the team. So you've already willing that out. Like, you're doing the sort of fee, you're working out which resources, who's resources.
We also get, from doing that, you have an invoicing schedule pretty much. It might change a little bit in case someone gets ill or et cetera, you know, for a week or so. But essentially, we can forecast out a year or two ahead of what we roughly think we're going to be invoicing month to month. And then whoever's, there'll be one of the collaborating team managing that. So invoices from the collaborators will come to me, and then one invoice goes to the client. You know, we try and make it as easy as possible for the client. And so then we pay the other collaborating team, but we also do monthly reporting. So when we're asking for their invoice, we're sending all the timesheets of everybody summarized, how that's benchmarked against what we were predicting we were forecasting we were going to be doing, so that they can see it, if it's moving up or down, or if they're hitting their targets or not. If it starts to creep one way too far, then we just, you know, we know really quickly, like, you know, so we'll just have another meeting. But we have regular meetings with leadership just to look at the financials, resourcing and planning. Yeah. And that's monthly on these projects where we all come together, look at where we're at, look at what's forecast. Are we going to meet our targets? Is it going to start to favour someone and the other? Okay, we need to bring someone else in on our team. We need to hire someone to bring it back to the right split. So we're constantly analysing those reports. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, if we, I think, and this is Simon, thank you so much for joining us again. So what we're, Simon. Missy and I.
I'm having real lockdown flashback.
For anybody listening, all three of us, I no longer live in Melbourne. All three of us live through lockdowns and I am very, very used
just I can't even blame the kids. Usually it was because the kids were downstairs gaming or something.
Yeah.
I'd be yelling at them. Get off.
The joys of doing this over the school holidays. Yes. So look, Simon, what we were talking about is we're talking about some of the things, learnings along the way and how to set it up. But I did have a question for you interrelated to this. As a business owner, what is the benefits of doing a JV versus just, you know, kind of using it and then growing yourself, keeping at a certain size of an organization? Or, you know,
I think that's a choice you make as a, in a business. I think something we've talked about a lot over, you know, our 25 years in business, particularly the last sort of 10 to 15 or so, is about what size we want to be. And, you know, and it comes down to what we want to be doing. And I'd say like a fundamental part of, and Missy's been a really big part of this and a really, you know, big part of the contribution to creating the culture or developing the culture and strengthening the culture at BKK. And for us, that's really vitally important. I think ever since we started, we wanted to have a place, you know, we've heard of no dickheads policy, and sort of we want to enjoy coming to work. It's not just a business, you know, it's a real passion of ours, and we really wanted to, you know, to enjoy coming in, to enjoy, you know, talking and working with the people that we have in the office, that's a really harmonious place. So I think keeping it at a certain size, I think, is important to allow us to do that. We've always had around in our heads a sort of 25-person practice, and you know, we're kind of doing a whole lot of strategy work at the moment to really think whether that's actually the right size or whether we need to be a little bit bigger than that. But fundamentally around that size, it allows us, and I think this is a benefit for clients too, and one of the point of differences is that it allows us to be a sort of studio-type environment where we're still involved in projects. Now, that comes with its own challenges because you can get stretched pretty thin, but you're dealing with the principles of the practice. Yeah. We're involved in design. Like, there's not, you know, the practice, particularly the projects I'm directly involved with, I know what's going on in them. You know, I kind of understand. I may not be across every single little detail, but I've got a pretty good idea of what's happening, and someone can just pick me up and say, what the hell's going on? And we can work through a solution. Whereas in larger practices, just by their nature, there's a very different structured approach to them. And they're very much more corporatized because they have to be, you know, otherwise things just go pear-shaped pretty quickly. So I think for, you know, it's a long, long way of kind of answering the question, but I think for us, you know, really one of the advantages for us is to have that nimbleness and the small scale and allow us to be a design-focused practice. Yeah. It means that we don't have to worry about taking on every project either. We don't have to be at a size where we've got to sort of feed the beast, as they say. You know, we don't have 80 people and we've got to take on everything that comes our way. We can be a little bit more discerning about it and actually choose projects we want and sectors we want to work in. And it's also then, I think, you know, good for clients in that they're kind of dealing with, you know, and I think increasingly that's important within the profession, not just with us, but with, you know, particularly consultants. Like, structural engineers who we work, you know, hand in glove with most of the time, and all of our consultants, a lot of them get sort of sucked into these large global entities, and you just lose, you know, like they'll buy up these small practices that we've been working with for a long time, and just suddenly they lose all that kind of, you know, nimbleness and attentiveness, detail, and all those things. Not all of them, but so I think there's, you know, that's for us is a bit to be able to kind of grow to a size to be able to deliver on those projects, but then maintain our core identity and our small scale. So, and that's, you know, that's a very unique thing because most people dealing in the big space that we're dealing in, the big, you know, Northeast Link type projects, which was, you know, the whole thing is, you know, we designed with Warren Marnie and TCL and Jeeva Greenaway the whole project of about $25 billion worth of infrastructure. Yeah. Delivering a, you know, $3 billion piece of it now. And normally you'd have to be a 100-person practice to be kind of working at that scale. So, that's the advantage. And then we don't have to lay off. We also, to maintain the culture we wanted to maintain, we didn't want to be kind of hiring and firing people. You know, they're not just, you know, They're not just people filling, you know, seats on desks and headcounts. You know, they're actually people who have got lives and, you know, can contribute in other ways. So, you know, in doing that, you kind of get a lot. I think we build a lot more out of the practice. Very long-winded answer. Sorry to interrupt.
I'll summarize that from my understanding is, in essence, it enables you to work on big scale projects without being a big beast. And I think you find that, and it's one of the interesting things, you know, work with multiple different sizes of companies, right? I've been part of an organization that we grew from 90 to over 200. The dynamics of that and things change, you know, and as you said, things corporatize. And I would say for architecture firms in particular, corporatizing sometimes means you lose that heart of the creativeness and what we're doing, and you can actually lose the special sauce sometimes along the way. But there are firms that do this very well and they still keep it and they're still of a large size. And I think we probably know who those are. But as a business owner, you don't also necessarily want to get that big. As you said, it's about feeding the beast. And that's where I think it's very interesting as a firm. You know, there's not many firms that will still stay doing, as you said, the 500K kind of refurb job and a $3 billion project. I think you would be one of the very unique firms that does that. And hence why we're having this conversation, because I think in the future that we see ahead, you know, with AI, we're obviously seeing more work going overseas, and that's, you know, that's another part of the industry and what's happening. But at the same time, I think the future will actually be more smaller firms. I think the size of organizations may be smaller versus them being larger. And this is where, you know, when you map out how many architecture firms there are across the country, we are talking like 5,000 to 10,000. It is enormous. And 70 to 80% of those firms are under 10. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, if you're a small firm and you're 5 to 10, maybe you want to get to 15, maybe, you know, I've got clients that say, I you know, collaborate with other people and they're 100 and I'm making better margin than I'm going to be making being the big beast, because that just comes with more overheads and everything. Is that it enables a business, and particularly for architects, architects are drawn to the work that they do, right? Whether you're hiring talent or whether you're the director yourself, and it seems that's very much within your ethos, actually doing good work. You know, you don't get into architecture to run a money-making machine. You get into architecture to build buildings. You're going to make a difference to the world and the people who use them.
Some do.
Well, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, and that's fine. And I think, yeah, I think absolutely. Oh, look, I think good architects, you know, really successful architects in design and do really good buildings are absolutely control freaks by nature. You know, you have to be really. Well, it goes with the territory, doesn't it? I mean, to deliver a good building, say even if it's a hospital, I mean, you really want to be considering everything down to the hinges on the doors on it, you know, and that in itself is kind of a huge thing. So most, you know, I won't know names. I was just meeting up with some very successful architects, gold medalists in Australia recently, and they are relentless. You know, they are still, you know, into their 60s and 70s. Sometimes they're just relentless about design. You know, think whether that's just got a mindset to it. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think it's in a really disciplined, kind of passionate way about delivering buildings, and they don't stop. Yes. You know, and I think that's the difference between, I think, you know, the sort of boutique type design practices, whether you're 10, 15, 50, even 100, can still be a sort of boutique design practice and a big global, you know, corporate entity. Those things don't always align.
So we've just obviously had the conversation, Missy, on actual practicalities of how you're doing. So I'm assuming some of these JVs, obviously, you've known some of these directors of other people, or have there been things where you've kind of gone, you know, these parts, how do those initial conversations, what have you found that's been successful? So Missy and I have talked about what you really need to think through, right? And so that's more from the operational side, from a purely director to director, and the benefits this is going to be, and going, this is somebody I could work with, and we're both on the same meeting of minds, let's call it. What are the things that you look for?
Oh, they're very different, actually, and no collaboration we've done has been really the same, even sometimes with the same entity. They've just been different projects under different governance. I think every architecture project we do now has some sort of different kind of contractual arrangement, you know, like, so they're very different in the way they operate, all sorts of different things. And it goes back to looking at what the project is and thinking about a team. And sometimes we'll look at it and think we can do this, is, you know, this is kind of right up in our wheelhouse, and we just need all these consultants to support that. sometimes we'll look at it and think, you know, we've really helped, you know, we think we can really deliver a better outcome and win the job too if we have these things. So that's important. So it's really a bit of horses for courses, a kind of approach to it. And, you know, some of them have been, you know, I think, you know, I'd say with Kirsten Thompson when we did the White Horse Performing Arts Centre, which was probably, it was a fantastic collaboration and really successful. It was two pretty like and like firms. I mean, like for like firms at the time. We're both, I don't know, around 15 people or something when we first teamed up on that. And, you know, both, you know, design practices and, you know, doing this similar sorts of work. And again, we just had a blended team, and a number of their staff came into our office for a couple of years, and we just worked together. And that presented its own challenges too, I think, culturally for them, and not so much for us, but I think particularly for them. And yeah, it's a really great outcome. When you look at the building, we can't walk around and say we did that. You know, that's it was great. And it looks, I think it doesn't look like a BKK building. I don't know if that is one that looks like a BKK building, but or Kirsten or it, that's a bit of a hopefully better than the sum of its parts.
Okay. I would just add in there, from my observation, because I've sat in a lot of these meetings with directors, you know, talking about the project. And I think the key is respect and allowing everyone to have space to communicate their ideas and their opinions. And sometimes you're going to have difficult conversations, and that's okay. But at the end of the day, I can say all of the ones I've been part of at BKK, the directors all respect each other, can have a laugh together, go out socially, whatever it is. There's no bad feelings, but there's been difficult conversations, but everyone listens and takes it on board, comes back to find a resolution. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a good point, Missy. You've got to take the good with the bad and understand that happens. We're going to make mistakes. You know, it's the same, you know, for people in life. You know, I think as you get older, you realise we all make mistakes, and that's okay. You know, it's actually just how you sort of manage through that. And I think I was going to say this actually before we dropped out. So I'm glad you reminded me, Missy, was I think, in our design ethos, and this is very different, I think, to generations before, I think it's a really contemporary idea about our practice and design is taking out the ego. And I talked a bit about that sort of patriarchal sort of hierarchy, and I think it's kind of been the same, you know, that cultural kind of idea that existed 50 years ago is now actually much more collaborative and much more working with a team of different people and getting different voices together. So once you take, it's okay to be a bit of a control freak and actually want to deliver on the thing, but do it without the ego.
Yeah. Well, I think we might change the control freak to probably more making sure there's quality assurance that, yeah, you know, we're thinking through the design.
The HR manager in you there.
I'm sure, you know, we've got that. And obviously with psych safety laws, we need to be very careful and astute on to
I find really interesting in both in practice and I think in, you know, Missy and I've talked about this quite a lot in terms of HR, and this extends beyond, you know, practice into collaboration thing is the current sort of understanding, much more awareness of diversity and neurodiversity and everyone's a little bit different and not trying to treat everyone the same. And I think if you kind of go into it with that sort of approach, then you can really start to build on your strengths rather than trying to get everyone to be the same. A collaboration won't work if you just say, right, we want everyone kind of working on the same, you know, you're all going to wear a uniform and come to work and, you know, we're all going to do the same thing, the same frog march. Yeah. We're actually, you know, trying to get the best out of everyone. So respect everyone, as Missy said, and then build on all our individual strengths. And that way you start to get the organism really humming.
Which is another benefit of the model that we work in at BKK, because staying the size we are, I'm able to talk to every single person every day, walk up to their desk, have a chat, go out for coffee, lunch, whatever it is, and really focus on each individual person and give them time and what they need to grow in their career, etc. So if I was, you know, overseeing as you have and respect, you've seen a big, you know, 100 plus more practice, you don't get to do that. You have to write a policy for everyone to abide by sometimes, or I don't know, like, you tell me how to do it. I like medium practice.
Well, I will say it is a bit of both. Like, obviously, you know, I think what you've pointed out is firstly, the ingredients that I hear from this is with any success, it's let's be clear on what the rules are. Let's be clear on, it's going to get murky as we go along. Nothing's ever going to be perfect, but let's be clear on what our intents are before we come in. Let's be clear on how we're seeing the structure of this. So, you know, this is the plan, where we're going. What is this going to potentially look like? But I think what you've sort of put over the top of that is it's not a set and forget and we just off we go. Mm-hmm. And it's like with any project as well, you don't just like, you know, as you were saying, Simon, you keep it small so you can be in it. You just let it go and then like, oh, how's that going along? And it's like, oh, shit, it went off the rails. Yeah. How did that happen? But it also isn't about making it complicated either. I mean, at the end of the day, things come down to very simple parts of can we work together? Is this a mutual benefit to what we're going to do? How are we clear on what money, you know, we're both going to get and how we're going to distribute it, who's going to collect it? So roles and responsibility and clarity. And we are talking about, you know, this is the way our brains work. We like these things, but it's in any organization. You look at that and it's exactly the same. I look and hear this and I go, it's very, very similar to how you need to do it if you've got multiple teams, even in an organization.
Yeah.
And I think, Simon, you know, we've talked about this in JV and collaboration, but at the end of the day, you're one of three, you know, partners who start an organization. The dynamics of working with multiple leaders in an organization, you have to be able to understand each other and what you're doing. And if you're going to do anything with anybody, it would be the same general principles. And as you said, you're going to make mistakes along the way. But with anything, it's this is the issue. Let's have the conversation around what the issue is. Let's just be simple and frank and nice and respectful. And I think that's where you've said, Missy, as well. Like it really does come down to what is the value we're going to bring, but also what are our values that we've got? How are we going to go about that? And I think whilst everything can look good on paper and the intentions may be there, it's also coming into that intention, like with any relationship of if this issue arises, this is how we're going to sort it out, or we're going to have that and we're going to be able to work through it. For me, I listen to this and it's fascinating because I don't think there's many firms who probably do collaborate on that nature with, you know, massive organizations on one hand and then smaller, similar firms, similar parts. It sounds like the general nature of how you come into it as well is a collaborative, how are we going to do this? What are we going to do? We're going to set it up for success. But like with anybody you work with, you've got to have that trust in, do we have each other's benefits out? Are we going to follow through on what we're going to do? And I think there's been some great coverage here. We've also talked about in quality and systems and how we're going to do things. And this is why we're doing this. I think it is something that a lot of practices out there trying to, you know, getting to new areas, do different things. But at the same time, there is actually ability for people to JV. Now, whether that long-term turns into a collaboration, there's multiple firms around the country that have one brand that actually are separate business identities and operate on their own operating systems but work together. So that partnership then turns into a different collaborative approach. And so it sounded like to me when you've talked about it, you can either choose that you're going to be the principal and then get sub-consultants, or you're actually going to look at this. If we've got more of an equal binding here of how we're going to do it, even design the infrastructure, how can we bring this together and be mutually beneficial? Whether it is going into new regions, whether it is going to new sectors, whether it is the smaller or the bigger, there's always those parts. And look, I have seen JVs previously. Obviously, I've worked for quite a large firm. You know, we do it with other very high design practices, or you hear that the same thing where there'll be specialist firms who might be in one thing, and then you know you've got this big design firm that might come in. What I'm hearing here is it's actually the quality of how we enter into that relationship and how we're clear on how we both going to come, both parties going to come, and that it's going to be mutually beneficial.
I think that's a great summary. I think it's a really great summary, that one. I think, I think one of the first things we talk about, you're absolutely right about being clear about what's happening. I think that's one of the lessons we've learned. If it's not really clear and the structure's not really clear, it can fall apart pretty quickly, just like in your own practice. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the same for everyone. But it tends to, I think, be worse when in a collaboration, but those things fall apart a bit quicker. Yeah, so one of the things we agree on really early on, we've learned to do, is like agree on what the naming of the project's going to be. Is it going to be BKK in collaboration with someone? Or is it going to be BKK, KTA? Is it going to be KTA, BKK? You're like, around that from day one, because quite often you wait till the end and then it's like, hang on a tick, and I didn't agree to, and you know, so that's a good, you know, fun. That just sort of highlights, I think, some of the things you really, that's one aspect of it, but you really need to consider that whole as much as you can. And I think what you said before is true. I think in an ethos of being that sort of respecting your team, I mean, that's the way we design too. We listen to, you know, I'm not going to sit here and think that I know everything in the practice and I'm going to come up with all the ideas. There's a, you know, the student in the practice will come up with equally great ideas as well. So the more you kind of listen and the more you're open to those ideas, to really expand what you can do and come up with even, you know, better kind of, you know, a better practice mode and I think richer ideas. One thing I think we just haven't touched upon and you didn't perhaps mention that summary too was I think one of the great benefits of collaboration is learning. You know, it's actually just like learning from others, you know, because if you do listen, that there's rather than, I think the worst collaborations, they're not really collaborations if you say, I'm going to have a big practice and we're going to do a few, we're going to get some young emerging practices in and they're going to do the cafe over there and something over here. And it's just sort of a, you know, they don't really get treated with very
much. You're carving up the work, you're not working.
Yeah, it's not, that's not a collaboration. And when you really do collaborate, you understand, I mean, I think designers like to think they've got these expansive minds and, you know, we're ultimately creative and we're open to anything. But you do start to think, you do think in patterns. And once you're working with someone else, you understand that, you know, you kind of really expands your horizons too, from a technical level, but also a creative level too. You suddenly think, oh, actually, I've never really thought about it that way. We could do it this way. And so our practice is definitely an amalgam of all these other practices. And I think Melbourne has been a fantastic environment for us to work in because of the collegiate nature of it. People are highly collaborative and they're very willing to give up their, I meet regularly with older architects that now mentor younger architects. And when we started sort of JCB, Jackson Clements Burrows, Neil and Idle. There was about three or four of us who set up a practice group and we used to share everything, like fee agreements, everything, you know, it was just open slather and it really helped us. And I still, you know, we still talk to each other now. And so I think, you know, that learning environment is fantastic. And I've always thought that it's partly the reason we did the radio show and done media and things that architecture is better when we all work together, when we all pull together. Yeah. Once you start trying to kind of climb over each other to kind of get to the top is when I don't think that's good for anyone.
Yeah. And we're looking at that collaboration of really expanding it now, like over 25 years of practicing this way and having an amazing network. And it's the way we think it's natural to everyone at BKK. So next year we're starting a series of talks that we hope will keep going beyond 26, but bringing in all different people from all different parts of, you know, Australia, the world, if they're over here visiting, that are solving creative problems or solving problems in a creative way or just sharing. The world's becoming, with AI and everything else going on and politics, it's even more important than ever that we all come together and think about how we're going to deal with these problems and try and help solve them together or at least work together and not separately. So we're really excited, about talking to people, you know, behavioral scientists or could be working in medicine or the arts or wherever it is, but, you know, all coming together and having a conversation.
And it's I think that's a design sort of expand. You know, that's a kind of working in teams, but it's also, we've always had that ethos in practice to look to other industries, not just to architecture, in how to run the practice, because there's lots of lessons to be learned from other people. So, you know, it's sort of aligned maybe disciplines or other things. You know, advertising is really interesting to us in the way that they, you know, or, you know, graphics industry or other kind of your music industry even, you know, just different ways of kind of doing things. And you can always learn something.
Yeah. Well, look, and that's why I love what I do, because I get to look at different businesses and different things and all of that part and never stop learning. And, you know, hence why
always
we do
good to look under the hood.
All right. So just to close out, just to sort of summarize in a very short form, you know, what's your advice to, one, why people should do JVs and then how to set it up for success?
Yeah, I just think you should do them if you love working with creative thinkers and other people, you know. It's, if you go in with an open mind and start early in the planning together and work genuinely together, it should be a good experience. So, yeah, and it'll take you into new sectors, meeting new people, building your network, learning more things, changing the way you might work in certain ways, you know. I'm not saying they're easy, but you will grow as a practice and even as a person by doing them.
Yeah, absolutely. And Simon, your advice?
Oh, it was a pretty good summary from Missy, but I have to say, I think architecture is increasingly really hard. And I think, you know, like a lot of business, there's so much more compliance. And I think, you know, in the 25 years I've been doing it, it's gone from relatively simple and easy to get a computer and start up a practice for doing something really quite complex. Mm. So I think, you know, the more that you kind of work with other people, talk to other people, you know, share your information like we are now, and the better you are. And I think it allows you to deal with the complexity of the business and the practice and the city, you know, how we mm-hmm. create cities. So I think it's enormously rewarding too. And I think, yeah, essentially I think architecture is about people. It's not about buildings. It's about, you know, how we inhabit space. So the more you kind of interact with other people, the more you kind of understand that and get better at it. Yeah. But yeah. I think, you know, we talked about, you know, how to set it up for success. I think it is just being mm-hmm. really clear about what you're trying to do, not just doing, okay, hey, let's, you know, let's do a collaboration together. What actually are you trying to do, and what are you trying to get out of it? How are you going to set it up? Get the business, get the money side of it, sort it out right from day one and make sure that's really, really clear. And the roles are really clear, like in your own business, and should be relatively successful. But as you said earlier, I think, Seaton, it's like I always think of our business as like a garden. You know, it's fantastic when you're kind of doing all the gardening right and you're attending to it, you know, all the time. It really flourishes. But if you neglect it, it will fall apart pretty quickly. And you know, collaborations are exactly the same.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I mean, nothing's ever stood still. You know, even saying what we do in HR, it's like, you know, we have a whole people operating system, and that has, we talked about those systems, but at the same time, as you were talking about, Missy, it is actually how you're tending to it, right? I live in Queensland, so it just grows tomorrow. It's like, well, the weeding needs done on a kind of weekly basis.
And people are fantastic, aren't they? I mean, I love people. There's so much to learn from each other. I couldn't even think of not being involved in, you know, the team and what their day looks like. So, you know, be curious.
I'll say from a talent point of view, and also from nature, again, I think it's very much about, like with anything, you just clear on what your intent is, you have the right systems in place. You know, once you do it, everything's different, but there's a certain way of approaching that. But then it is actually the intent of which we go, that alignment is a big part. But the benefit of what you've been able to do and the projects you've been able to work on, your portfolio of work that you've got will be so diverse in comparison. The attraction for that for designers coming through is enormous, because they're not doing the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. They're getting to do it, and they're getting very good at certain areas, but then they're also getting that diversity. So as Missy said, you know, you've got very long-standing employees who've been with you and, you know, long service. And the thing is the efficiency that comes out of that. As a business owner, not losing and having to pay recruiter fees all the time, or, you know, that knowledge walks out the door. You're always going to have turnover. It's part of it. But I, you know, businesses are their people, right? Your business and what you're doing is actually saying, Simon, you're so involved. You couldn't achieve what you're achieving without the team that you have, and knowing that they're adding to that, but also being able to deliver on the outcomes that you're looking for. And, you know, Missy, you talked about that. The actual formula isn't that hard. No. Right? But majority of people, it's always sort of missing. You know, I know, as my partner and I have talked about, when HR is going well, it doesn't seem like you need it. But when it's not going well, you do. It's not till you realize. Oh, it's not working. What happened? It's a bit like cooking spaghetti, right? Like it always, there's a different ingredients all the time and things slightly different, but the recipe is the same to success and what it is. And so I think you guys have got same approach as you're taking internally, same part. So excellent. Thank you so much for all of your time and those insights. We really hope that for anybody listening in, that this has been very useful and understanding. And I really think that I hope this is something that more firms will look to do and see their success in as well. Excellent.
Okay, hesitate to reach out if you want to talk about it. We're happy to chat in it.
Yeah, we love having people visit us.
We'll include your details in the show notes. And no doubt there might even be some firms who reach out to you who are interested in growing and collaborating with you as well. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Seaton. You're doing a great job. Thanks, congrats to your new ventures.
Fantastic chat. What great insights. I really learned from that the benefits definitely outweigh any of the challenges that you're going to find along the way. And really, it's actually that simple. It's actually just about planning it out and having those conversations up front, like you do with anything. if you want to be doing something successfully, actually knowing what your intention is and what you're looking to do and get out of it and having those conversations. So I hope anybody listening found that very interesting. I definitely do see that this is a world for JVs that needs to open up for multiple firms to be able to expand their knowledge, and there's more positives than you'll ever realize.